Protests continue today, but there are signs now that Ukraine's embattled president is going to sign a deal with the European Union after all. It was the decision by Viktor Yanukovych not to sign that deal that sparked those protests in Kiev in the first place. Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist. He's with us from London to discuss. Edward, welcome back to Here and Now.
Lovely to be on the program again. Hello.
Well, most Americans don't spend a lot of time thinking about Ukraine, but this particular moment has become a much bigger issue, it seems, an issue of East versus West, no?
Yes, I think that's a very important aspect of it. The European Union isn't used to playing geopolitics, but geopolitics is being played in Europe. And I see what's happening in Ukraine as part of a much bigger picture, which is Russia's desire and to some extent success in getting the countries of the former Soviet Union back under a kind of Kremlin umbrella. And it's particularly easy for them to do this in Ukraine because Ukraine has an economy which is in crisis and is run by authoritarian crony capitalists who find it very hard to talk to the European Union in a language that both can understand.
Well, then what do you make of the news, though, that Catherine Ashton from the European Union says that President Yanukovych is perhaps flip-flopping, going back and will, in fact, pursue this EU trade deal?
I don't think we can take Viktor Yanukovych's promises very seriously. He was promising this earlier in the year, and a lot of negotiations happened to try and get things ready for the Vilnius summit of the European Union in November, where he was going to sign this deal. But he came under a lot of pressure from Russia. They offered him cheap gas and soft loans, and they made some threats. They imposed some trade sanctions. And in the end, the EU doesn't really do threats and it doesn't really do bribes. And I think he still thinks that the EU and America and the IMF and all the other Western countries and organizations can somehow produce a pot of money which will balance what is an offer from the Kremlin. And that, unfortunately, just isn't the way the West works. So I think he's still trying to bargain between the two. But I think that the cards are falling very much on the Kremlin side of the river.
You write that President Yanukovych is worried that he may be poisoned if he does the wrong thing here, as his predecessor was many years ago.
Yes, Viktor Yushchenko, who was the opposition leader trying very hard to pull Ukraine in a westward direction, was poisoned with dioxin and permanently disfigured. It didn't stop him becoming president, but it's something that's very much on Mr. Yanukovych's mind because he doesn't want the same thing to happen to him. And he travels with a retinue of cooks and tasters and bodyguards that wouldn't be out of place in the 10th century Byzantine court. It's quite extraordinary.
Why didn't Ukraine join the EU at the same time that Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania and other countries in that area did?
Too big, too poor, too backward and too far away, I think would be the main reasons. It was quite a business for the EU taking in these initial eight countries, and some voices in the EU then said this is too far, too fast. And to take in a country like Ukraine, which has not got much record of functioning democracy, rule of law, media, and particularly institutional reform, it just doesn't have the sort of institutions you need to deal with the EU. You have to build them up first before they've been in a position to join. And unfortunately, the EU, like I'm afraid America as well, rather neglected Ukraine and have concentrated too much on what's happening in Russia and not enough on this enormously important country of 48 million people, which is really the swing vote in the whole former Soviet Union. If it goes westwards, then it's basically time up for Putin in the long run. If it goes under Putin's or the Kremlin's control, then it helps recreate a kind of sort of smaller version of the Soviet empire.
It's time up for Putin. Explain what you mean by that. Why would a country like Ukraine make such a difference for Putin's power?
Because if you can make a success story of a large Slavic industrialized ex-Soviet country, then it's very hard to see why it wouldn't work in Russia too. And Putin's big message is that Russia's different. This is a different civilization. We're Slavic, we're Orthodox, we're Eastern. We do things differently. We have a much stronger state. We don't think the same way about freedom. We don't think quite the same way about human rights. And that whole message would be derailed if you had a successful transition in Ukraine towards a proper market economy and without this kind of crony capitalism and towards a really thriving, functioning democracy with political liberty and the rule of law. So I think it's tremendously important. We've already seen that. I mean, it's pretty important in the Baltic states. We've made Estonia a really big success story. And this is very troubling for Russians who live the other side of the border, who see that they live in decades behind in almost every sense. And so the more Estonia is only 1 million people, Ukraine's 48 million. So if Ukraine becomes a success story, it's a really powerful soft power challenge to the Putin regime.
I spoke yesterday with Olga Bielkova, who is one of the opposition leaders in Ukraine, and I asked her if she was worried about harming the relationship with Russia with these protests, which the Russian relationship is still very important for Ukraine. They get a lot of natural gas from Russia and have a lot of trade with Russia. Here's what she said.
Well, that's another speculation. You know, if you talk to anybody in Ukraine, everybody wants productive, constructive relationships with Russia. We are not blocking Russian goods in Ukraine. We are buying a lot from Russia, and we do want to sell to Russia without being hostage of economic wars. So we do want to have constructive relationship, but we don't want to them to take away our freedom.
Edward Lucas, what do you make of those comments?
Well, I couldn't put it better. I mean, I think she's absolutely right. And you know, we all want to trade with Russia. We want a strong, prosperous Russia that we can do deals with and that we can sell things to. And we want a country that's a reliable supplier of important things such as natural gas. At the moment, we don't have that. We have a place that's extremely difficult to do business in, where the rules of the game are basically fixed by political favours rather than by competitiveness or talent or anything like that. So we would like Russia to be different. We're going to have a long wait, I fear. But in the meantime, we do have a chance of having a good relation with Ukraine, and that's good for Ukraine and for us. And ultimately, as I've argued, it's good for Russia too.
What's at stake for the United States?
It's not in the United States' interest to see a recreated Soviet empire. Brzezinski said, with Ukraine, Russia's an empire. Without Ukraine, Russia's just another country. So that's one thing. It's also very much in the United States' interest, as President Obama is now, I would say, belatedly recognizing, to have a very strong relationship with Europe and to have a strong Europe to have the relationship with. And so if Europe is facing a sort of catastrophic collapse of its influence on its eastern borders, that's bad for Europe, and therefore it's bad for the United States. And I think it's also just because, yeah, I believe, and I hope many Americans believe too, that the freedom and democracy and justice are good things, and the more people who have them, the better. And if we have 48 million people who were heading towards our way of life, and with all the benefits that entails, and now they're going back into a kind of authoritarian crony capitalism, that's just a bad thing for the whole planet, not just for America.
Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist. Edward, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.